All right, so we'll say good morning. We have a beautiful, beautiful daf today. Let's pick up with Umi Kasvan. Today's daf is Tesvav 15. We are picking up from Yeretz Hashem on Yud Dalid Amud Beis 14b. So the Gemara says the following. Umi Kasa Moshe. So we'll say we dedicate our learning today as a zuchus for the aliyah of neshama of Freida Bas Moshe Yosef. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah and her family in nechama. Umi Kasan. So we'll say, yesterday we established the Chaf Dalet Sifrei Tanakh, now we have to ask the fundamental question, which is, who wrote what? Umi Kasan. So Moshe Kasav Sifro Parshas Bilam V'Iyov. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Sifro. And they said, "What is Zuchus? What's Sifro? What's his Sefer? That's the Torah." Moshe Rabbeinu, can you imagine being on the level with the Torah? Halavai, we should all be Zocha, right? That the Torah is called our Sefer, my Sefer. So Moshe Rabbeinu wrote his Sefer and Parshas Bilam. I will say Parshas Bilam means the brachos of Bilam. Now, the reason, interestingly enough, it's reckoned separately is because it's the one part of the Torah that records prophecy of a Gentile prophet. So as such, again, it's recorded a bit. So it's just looked at as a separate entity. Parshas Bilam and Iyov. And Sefer Iyov. Yoshua Kasav Sifro. Yoshua wrote his Sefer, meaning Sefer Yoshua. Ushmona Psukim Shabbat Torah. And I will say the last eight Psukim in the Torah. Now the last eight Psukim in the Torah is where Moshe Rabbeinu dies. Moshe Rabbeinu dies and post Moshe Rabbeinu's death. Shmuel Kasav Sifro B'Shoftim Virus. Shmuel wrote Sefer Shmuel, Sefer Shoftim and Rus, Megillas Rus. David Kasav Sefer Tehillim Ayidei Asara Zekinim. David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim, but he did so with the collaboration of 10 elders. Now, we'll say what this means over here. What does it mean with the collaboration of 10 elders? What it means is that not all of Sefer Tehillim was written by David, but he compiled Sefer Tehillim. There are certain kapitlach, as Rashi points out, which you're looking on your own, that were written by others. So who are the 10 elders? Ayidei Adam Arishon, Ayidei Malki Tzedek, Ayidei Avram, Ayidei Moshe, Ayidei Haman, we'll discuss who Haman was, Ayidei Yedusun, Ayidei Asaf. And again, Rashi points out all the different kapitlach that bear these names. Top of Tesvav, Ayidei Shlosha B'nei Korach. And ultimately, again, with the three sons of Korach. Yirmiyo, so those are all the collaborators on Sefer Tehillim. Yirmiyo Kasav Sifro, the Sefer Melachim, the Kinos. Yirmiyo wrote his Sefer, i.e. Sefer Yirmiyo, right? Sefer Melachim, and Kinos. Chizkiah V'Siyaito, Kasvu, so Chizkiah and his cohorts. Now, who are his cohorts? What does it mean, Siyaito? So Rashi says over here, it's the first Rashi in the Daf, B'nei Doro, Sherichu Yomim Acharov. These were people who lived in the same generation, but who lived longer than Chizkiah. So what did they write? They wrote Yeshaya, Mishlei, Shirashirim, V'Kohelas. And when they say they wrote it, obviously, Shira Shirim Kohelas was the wisdom of Shlomo, but they are the ones actually who gathered it and codified it. Anshe Knesset HaGedol, the men of the Great Assembly, Kasvu Yecheskel, Shneim Asar, Daniel Umegilas Esther. Ezra, what did Ezra write? Ezra Kasav, Sifro. So Ezra wrote, Sefer Ezra, V'yachas Shal Divri HaYamim Ad Lo. And he wrote the genealogies included in the book of Divrei HaYomim up until his own genealogy. Misayeya lei l'Rav. So this seems to support the position of Rav, because what does Rav say? Da'amarav Yehuda Amarav lo ala Ezra mi Bavel ad sheiches atzmo va'ala. That so Rav said that Ezra did not come back from Bavel. Remember again, Ezra is the one who leads the Jews back from Bavel to rebuild the second base Hamikdash. Ezra did not come back up until when? Until he went ahead and he established his own genealogy. Now, we saw this before in Maseches Gittin as well, which is that there are significant genealogical issues with the Jews in Bavel, because they intermarried heavily, and as such, their familial lines became all corrupted. To the point that Ezra, as remember again, made everyone do a family tree, and remember again, Ezra Dafka took the Psulim with him up to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to be able to keep an eye on those who had genealogical issues. So Ezra established his own genealogy as well. Umanaske, so who finished up Sefer Ezra? So who finished up Divrei Hayamim? So Nehemiah ben Chachaya. Nehemiah finished it up. Amar, Yoshua Kasef Sefer Shmona Psukim Shabbat Torah. So we'll say again, it's a very moving Gemara. Yoshua wrote his Sefer, i.e. Sefer Yoshua, and the last eight Psukim in the Torah. Remember again, those last eight Psukim are the death of Moshe Rabbeinu and the mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu. Tanya Kimanda Amar, Shmona Psukim Shabbat Torah Yoshua Kasvan. So we'll say this supports the idea that the last eight Psukim in the Torah were written by Yoshua. This Sanya, Vayamas Sham Moshe Eben Hashem, as the pasuk says, Moshe, the servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, died. Efsher Moshe Meis, Vikasav Vayamas Sham Moshe. Could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu died and the pasuk says Moshe died? In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, is the scribe of the Torah. Could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu is writing his own death as it's occurring? To which the Gemara says, Ella, ad kan kasav Moshe, mikan ve'ilach kasav Yoshua divrei Yehuda. Rather again, the Gemara, va'amri lei Rabbi Nehemiah. So also, I say, the first opinion says, you're right, Moshe Rabbeinu writes everything up until the last eight psukim in the Torah, and then the last eight ultimately are recorded by Yehoshua. Amar Lo Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon says, Efsher, Sefer Torah Chaser Os Achos. Could it be, now we'll explain what this means in just a moment, but could it be that a Sefer Torah was missing just even one letter? Vakas uksiv, but the pasuk says, Lakoach es Sefer Torah hazeh. We made reference to this yesterday, that Moshe Rabbeinu gave a Sefer Torah ultimately to Bnei Levi. Now remember again, our machlokas from yesterday was what? Where was this Sefer Torah kept? Was it kept in the Aron? Was it kept on the shelf outside the Aron? But everyone agrees, the pasuk says, that he gave Bnei Levi a Sefer Torah. Now, if you say that Moshe Rabbeinu did not write the last eight psukim, then what? Then Moshe Rabbeinu gave them a quote-unquote deficient Torah. But yet the pasuk seems to indicate that Moshe gives Bnei Levi a complete Sefer. Ella, listen to how beautiful this is. Ad kan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer, O Moshe Omer V'Kosef. Rather, we'll say what it means is the following. Up until the last eight psukim in the Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam says the words, Moshe Rabbeinu repeats the words, and writes it down. Mikan ve'elach, I will say, for the last eight psukim in the Torah, Chiddush Baruch Hu Omer, the Ribbono Shel Olam said the words, Umoshe Chosev Vedema. And Moshe Rabbeinu wrote those words, I will say, not with ink, but rather again with his own tears. So profound. Kimo Shene'emar, as the pasuk says, Kimo Shene'emar Lahalon. So we'll say, so again, the Gemara is therefore suggesting the entire Torah was written again by HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking, Moshe repeating and then writing. Last eight psukim were written differently. HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks and Moshe Rabbeinu writes the psukim with tears. The Gemara gives a raya to this process of how things are transcribed. So the Gemara says, "Kimo shenemar la'alon, v'yomer lahem baruch mipiv yikra Elias called dvar ma'ila, v'ani kosef ala sefer bidio." We'll say, as Baruch, who was one of the scribes of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, explains, my master would tell me over the words, and I would repeat them and transcribe them, or I would go ahead and transcribe them. So the Gemara says, "Kiman ozlo." Hadon Rav Yehoshua ben Abba, Bar Abba Amrav Gidlo Amrav, Shmona Psukim Shebetorah, Yachid Kore Osam. So we'll also listen to this. So now we have a fundamental machlokas. We saw this before. This is a Gemara Maseches Megillah. So we have a fundamental machlokas as to how the last eight Psukim in the Torah were written. First opinion says it was Yehoshua. Second opinion says it was Moshe Rabbeinu, but the last eight are different than the rest of the Torah. Because whereas the rest of the Torah is written, God dictates, Moshe repeats and then writes with ink, the last eight are written with Moshe Rabbeinu's tears. So says the Gemara the following. So whose opinion is reflected in the statement of Rabbi Yeshua? Because Rabbi Yeshua said, in the name of Rav Gidl, so in the name of Rav, the last eight psukim, Yachid Kora Osan, last psukim in the Torah, ultimately again, are read by an individual. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. It's almost right, it's right across in Rashi. Rashi says, Yachid Kore Osan. Yachid Kore Osan. Kilomar Ein Mafsikin Bohem. So we'll say there's an opinion that says that you are not permitted to break up the last eighth psukim in the Torah. Now, of course, the novelty in this is what? Under normal circumstances. So again, what's the halacha? A minimum amount for an aliyah is three psukim. So if I have eight psukim, I could easily break that up into two aliyos. But yet again, there is an opinion that we do not break up the last eight psukim in the Torah. Whose opinion does that reflect? Lema Rabbi Yehudahi Udlok Rab Shimon. It would appear that this reflects the view of Rabbi Yehuda, namely that Yehoshua was the one who wrote the last eight psukim. Now how so? Take a look at Rashi. Lema Rabbi Yehudahi Dil Amar Lo Kasva Moshe Vefichach Nishtanu Mishar Torah Udlok Rab Shimon. So we'll say this must reflect the view of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that Yehoshua wrote the last eight psukim. And because Yehoshua wrote the last eight psukim, therefore what? They are different than the rest of the Torah. So because they're different than the rest of the Torah, that difference is highlighted by the fact that, so I mean, how do we highlight that these psukim are different than the rest of the Torah? How? By not breaking them up. By only allowing them to be read as a unit. So that would seem to reflect the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Ultimately, again, that the last eight psukim were written by Yehoshua and not by Moshe. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe not. To which the Gemara answers, no. It could even ultimately be like Reb Shimon. Why? Because Rav Osai, even Reb Shimon agrees that what? The last eight psukim are different. In other words, Rav Osai, what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. Everyone agrees that the last eight psukim of the Torah are different and therefore must be treated differently than the rest of the Torah. The only shaila is what? What's the nature of the difference? According to the first opinion, the nature of the difference is that it was Yehoshua who wrote it and not Moshe. And according to the second opinion, the nature of the difference was what? That it was Moshe, that the last eight are written bedema, written in tears, as opposed to the rest of the Torah, which is written in ink. But either way, because there is a clear difference, the way that difference is portrayed, or the way that difference is reinforced, is that those last eight psukim must be read as a unit. Incredible. So the Gemara goes weiter. Yosher Rav Osai says, again, we're still focusing on the authorship here. Yehoshua Kasav Sifro. So remember again, the Gemara said before that Yehoshua wrote his Sefer, i.e. Sefer Yehoshua. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Good morning. So again, Yehoshua wrote his Sefer. But one second, the pasuk says that Yehoshua died. So you want to say, how ultimately again is how could Yehoshua be writing that he died? The Aske Elazar. Oh, Elazar, the Kohen Gadol, finished off Sefer Yehoshua. I have Haksiv Elazar ben Aramis. But one second, but the pasuk in Yehoshua also says that what? Elazar died. So what's the pshat? The Aske Pinchas. Pinchas finished up Sefer Yehoshua. So we'll say, so it turns out that in fact Sefer Yehoshua has three authors. You have Yehoshua writing until his death, Elazar writing until his death, and Pinchas finishing the Sefer. Amazing. Shmuel Kasav Sifro. So Shmuel wrote his Sefer, i.e. Sefer Shmuel. I have a Haksiv. But the pasuk says, Ushmuel Meis. Ushmuel Meis. But yet the pasuk says, ultimately again, that Shmuel died. So the Gemara says, so how does that work? The Aske Gad Hachoze V'Nasan HaNavi. So we'll say, ultimately again, Gad Hachoze, so the point over here is that where it says that Shmuel died, so the other Nevi'im of God and Nasan picked up. David Kasav Sefer Tehillim Ayidei Asar Zekin. So we'll say, now we're up to Sefer Tehillim. So ultimately again, David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim with the help of 10 elders. So the Gemara, now remember, we discussed the 10 elders already before. The Gemara listed them on Yudal Amud Beis. One of the people missing that the Gemara suggests was a man by the name of Eson HaEzrachi. So why don't we include Eson HaEzrachi? Why don't we include ultimately again this individual? Amrav Eson HaEzrachi Zehu Avram. Because we'll say Eson HaEzrachi is another name for Avram Avinu. So what does that mean? Ksiv Hacha Eson HaEzrachi, it says over here in Tehillim, that's Maskil LeEson HaEzrachi, Uksiv Hasam, Mehir Mimizrach Tzedek. And we'll say again, the Pasuk in Yeshaya says, who is the one who caused righteousness to come from the east? We'll say that's a reference to Avraham Avinu, who journeyed from the east to Eretz Yisrael. So, just an interesting aside, Avraham Avinu is also known as Eson HaEzrachi. Eson also means the beloved one. Aram Avinu was known as the beloved one from the east. So beautiful. So the Gemara goes like, Kachashiv Moshe veKachashiv Haman. So remember again, amongst the authors of Sefer Tehillim, so in the list we had Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu, and a man by the name of Haman. V'ha'amar Rav, Haman ze Moshe. But yet again, Rav said that Haman is another name for Moshe Rabbeinu. Now what does that mean? K'siv hacha, Haman, u'k'siv hasam, Bechobesi Ne'emanhu. So often it's assumed that the name Haman is a descriptive term for Moshe Rabbeinu, coming from the word Ne'eman, the most trusted member of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's household, to which the Gemara says, Trei Haman Havu. Also, there are two men by the name of Haman. One of them was Moshe Rabbeinu, another one was the name, another guy named Haman, not another guy, another man who contributed to Sefer Tehillim by the name of Haman. We'll say, according to some opinions, like the Mashal brings this down as well, that it could be that people like this, like Haman, were members of the Levitic choir. Remember again, it's important to understand, Sefer Tehillim was compiled by David HaMelech to be used for the Levium, for Levitic song, for Shira in the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech wanted very badly to build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what he wanted more than anything. He was not able to do so, but he was able to do two things. He was able to purchase the land. Remember, he purchases the threshing floor from Aravna HaYevusi. That would become the future site of the Harabais, the Beis HaMikdash. And he writes Sefer Tehillim, which again was used for Shira, for the Levium. So Mashar brings down that Haman was one of the members of the Levitic choir. So the Gemara goes weiter. Moshe Kasav Sefer Parshas Bilam the Iov. So we'll say Moshe, as we said before, Moshe then wrote his Sefer, of course, being the Torah. Parshas Bilam, which as we discussed before, is looked at separately because it's the only prophecy by a Gentile prophet, and Sefer Iov. And the book of Iov, Miseli Rabbi Levi Bar Lachma. So we'll say, as we're going to see now, there's an incredible machlokus about the chronology. When exactly did Iov live? So there's an opinion that holds that Iov lived during the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, which would then make sense why Moshe Rabbeinu was the author for Sefer Iov. K'siv hacha mi yitain eifo, uksiv v'yichtivun mili, uksiv hasam ubema yivada eifo. So as I say, the Gemara picks up on the lashon of Eifo in Iov and the lashon of Eifo by Moshe Rabbeinu. Ve'ema b'mei Yitzchak. But if that's the case, that it's about the word Eifo, we find the word Eifo by Yitzchak as well. Mi Eifo hu atzad atzayid by Esav. Ve'ema Yaakov dichsev imkein Eifo zo sasu. Ve'ema Yosef dichsev Eifo him roim. In other words, if you're just bringing almost like a raya from the fact that in Sefer Iov it uses the word Eifo, and that's by Moshe Rabbeinu uses the word Eifo, also uses the word Eifo by Yitzchak, by Yaakov, by Yosef, lo sagrait cha dechsid, because the pasuk Rabosai in Iov says, lo sagrait mi yitain b'sefer v'yuchku. It says ultimately again, who will go ahead and write it in a sefer and allow it to be inscribed? Umoshe hu de'ikri mechokek. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's ultimately known as the ultimate scribe. Dechsiv v'yari shis lo. Because the Pasuk ultimately says, talking about the tribal portion of Dan, that Dan chose his particular tribal portion ultimately because he saw there, he knew that that was the burial place of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rava Amar, so we'll say, by the way, that idea of Eov living in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, also there's a very moving medrash that not only did Eov live during the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, but that Eov was one of the advisors of Paro, right? Eov, Yisro, all these incredible personalities were somehow tied to Paro, and that their fates or their life events were very much tied into how they advised Paro regarding Klal Yisro. First white line of us in the bottom, Tesvav Amad Aleph. Rava Amar, Eov bimei miraglim hoya. Others say that Eov lived during times of the miraglim. Ksiv hacha ish haya be'eretz utz. Eov shmo, it says in Sefer Eov, there was a man who lived in Eretz Utz, in the land of Utz, and his name was Eov. Uksiv hasam hayesh ba'etz. And yet, interestingly enough, when Moshe Rabbeinu sends the miraglim into Eretz Yisrael, one of the questions he tells them, or one of the things he tells them to look for is what? Hayesh ba'etz. Is there a tree? So the Gemara is making a little bit of like a play on words over here of Eitz and Utz. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Midami, hacha utz, hasam eitz. I don't understand exactly what you're bringing out over here. Two different words. Hachi kamalu Moshe Yisrael. Moshe, this is how beautiful this is. This is what Moshe is saying to Klal Yisrael. Yeshnu la'os adam sheshnosa baruchos ke'etz. When you go into the land, see if the man whose years number as many as a tree is still alive. Umagin al doro, and he's protecting his generation, Keitz. So in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was asking them, see if Eov is still alive. If Eov is still alive, then it could be that his zuchus, he's like the eights. Number one in terms of his longevity, number two in terms of the protection of his branches. See if he is still alive. This is amazing. There was one of the Rabbanon who was sitting before Rabbi Shlomo Bar Nachmani, and he said, the story of Eov never happened. Ela Mashahaya. Eov, there was never an Eov, he never lived. Rather, the entire Sefer Eov is a parable, is a mashal, which I will say, you understand, it would be a very powerful mashal for the concept of tzaddik v'ra'lo. Meaning that, because even if Eov did live, that is the take-home message of Sefer Eov, that bad things happen to good people. So ultimately, again, this opinion said, Eov never happened. So the Gemara says, Amarlei, Alecha Amakra, Ish Haya Be'eretz Utz Eov Shmo. To which they responded to this particular member of the Rabbana, how can you say that? Meaning the Navi explicitly says, there was a man who lived in Eretz Utz, and his name was Eov. Ela Me'ata, Ulurash, Ein Kol, But the Gemara brings right over here from the exchange between Nasan Hanavi and David in Shmuel Beis. This is after the episode with Bathsheba. And the Navi comes to give David HaMelech Musar, and he gives him the Musar by giving him a parable ultimately of a man, of a rich man who had a lot, and a poor man who had one little sheep. And the rich man took the lamb of the poor man. So the Gemara says, same thing over here. This is a mashal, right? This is a mashal. Mihava, did this guy that Nasan HaNavi described ever exist? No. Ela mashal ba'alma. It was just a mashal. Hachanai mashal. So to again, Sefer Eov is also just a mashal. Aye, but one second. Imkein shmo v'shem yiro lama. But if Sefer Eov is a mashal, then why do they give the guy a name, and why do they give him a city? In other words, if you want to give it a mashal, okay, we're Tanakh is filled with mashalim. Mashalim don't usually give names to people, nor do they give places of residence. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Damri Tarvayu, Eov me ole golahaya. So we'll say, so far what we've seen over here is the following. We've seen the opinion that says that Eov lived during times of Moshe Rabbeinu. We now have seen another second opinion that what? Eov never lived. The whole thing is a mashal. Now a third opinion. Eov me ole golahaya. Eov was one of the Jews who came back from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael with Ezra. Obeis midrasho b'Tveriahaya. And when, this is amazing. And when Eov came back, he established a Beis Medrash in Tveria. That's Beis Medrash in Tveria. Incredible. So the Gemara says, Meisvei, Yimeishnosav Shal Eov, Meishosh Nechnusi Yisrael Mitzrayim Atshe Yatsu. They also have another Bryce that says that the years of Eov were from the time that Klal Yisrael entered into Mitzrayim until they left, which sounds like what they're both saying, that Eov lived during the times of, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, Klal Yisrael sojourned in Mitzrayim. Ema, so what does it mean? I'm amazed. Ema, it doesn't mean that he lived during that time. Rather, what does it mean? He lived that amount of time, i.e. 210 years. So we've got times of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? It's the time of Mitzrayim. Ole Bavel never lived. Okay, so those are the opinions we have so far. I'm sorry? And, right, correct. That seems to go in line with the opinion of Moshe Rabbeinu. So during the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Mesei, now where is another kasha? Shiva Nevi'im Nisnavulu Umos Ha'olam. Now the way we're assuming to read this line is, there are seven Gentile prophets, or literally seven men, seven prophets, who prophesied for the Gentiles. I'm saying that what this sounds like is, that these individuals themselves were not Jewish. Ve'eluhein, Bilam Ba'aviv, Bilam and his father, Eov, Eliphaz HaTemani, who was one of the guys who visited Eov, Bildad HaShuchi, Sofra HaNa'amasi, Ve'eliu Ben Barachah. They all visited Eov. Ha'abuzi. So I'll say, so now, what's the kasha? The kasha is, it sounds like what? Eov's not Jewish. This sounds like over here that Eov is from the Gentile nations. Now again, I'll say, what does this contradict? This contradicts the opinion that holds that Eov was from Ole Bavel. If you hold that Eov came back with the Jews from Bavel, that means that Eov was Jewish. This clearly indicates to us that Eov was not Jewish. Ula Tamech, Eliyahu ben Barachel, Lav Mi Yisrael Hava, But one second, you think you get, you know, Eliyahu ben Barachah, that's the Yiddish Anumim, right? So, you know, that's, you know, that, he's also Jewish, right? So obviously, this list is not a list of Gentiles. So the Gemara says, V'ha'ak siv me'mishpachas Ram. He was from the Mishpacha of Ram, which was a Jewish Mishpacha. Ella, rather, what does it mean? This is not a list of Gentile prophets. Rather, what is it? Ella invuye invi lu'umo sa'ola. Rather, what this is this is a mixed list. There are Gentiles and there are Jews on this list. The common denominator amongst them is what? Is that they dafka prophesied for the Gentile nations. I'm sorry? Oh, so Yonah's primary nevuah was still for Klal Yisrael. Yonah's nevuah for Nineveh was a one-off nevuah, but Yonah was the Talmud Mufak of Elisha. He was another Yisrael. Hachanami Iov in Vuye Inve Lumos Olam. Rather, again, what do you see? So too, Iov's primary nevuahs were nevuahs for the Gentile nations. Atu Kulu Nevi Milo in Vuye Lumos Olam. But one second. Did not most of the prophets, I should say, did not all of the prophets also prophesize for the nations of the world? In other words, they're both saying, every prophecy that impacts Klal Yisrael by definition impacts the entire world. Right? There's no such thing as a prophecy that doesn't impact the entire world. To which the Gemara says, Hasam Iker Neviu Saihu Li Yisrael. Hacha Iker Neviu Saihu Umo Solom. Both say, here's the difference. The difference in the men in these lists is that the Iker of their in general, the regular Nevi'im that we have, their primary prophecy is for Klal Yisrael. The secondary impact is on the nations of the world. Masha'inki and the Nevi'im listed in this list, their primary Nevu'as were directed towards the Umo Solom. Meisve, Chasid Hayabu Umo Solom, the Iyuv Shmo. So I'll say another Braisa, there was a Chasid who was the pious man amongst the nations of the world, and his name was Iov. His name was Iov. Velo bali olam ele kedei lekabel scharo. And he only came ultimately to this world to be able to receive his reward. Hevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu alav Yisurin. The Ribbono Shel Olam brought suffering upon him. Hischa mecharif umegadef. He began to curse and began to blaspheme. Kafalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu scharo ba'olam hazeh. The Ribbono Shel Olam therefore doubled his reward in this world. In order to make him lose his portion in the world to come. So again, another conflicting braisa. Because according to this braisa, again, Iov was not Jewish. He was amongst the Hasidi Umo Sa'olam. But that ultimately, again, Iov himself takes a wrong turn in this world and ultimately ends up, although benefiting in this world, losing out on his Olam Haba. To which the Gemara says, Tanaihi. In reality, Rabosai, both the identity as well as the chronology of Iov is subject to Tanaic dispute. Tisanya, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Iov bimei Shvota Shoftim Haya. So as the others say, that Iov lived during the times of the Shoftim. Now remember, what's the Shvota Shoftim? So that's a pretty big range between Yoshua and between Shaul. Shaul being the first Melech Shenehemar, because the Pasuk says, Hein atem kulchem chazisem, velama ze hevel tivalu. Because I will say, the Pasuk says, behold, you have all seen, velama ze hevel tivalu. Why do you waste your time with nothingness? To which the Gemara says, Ezehu dor shekula hevel. What was the door ultimately again, which was total hevel? Now Rashi says, what does it mean, total hevel? Shekula hevel. Hatovim shebahen bohaya klum. What was the generation where even the good people were not so great? To which the Gemara says, "Ze doro shel shvot hashoftim." We'll say this now. What does it mean, shvot hashoftim? This was the generation where the people judged the judges. We will get into this in greater depth. That represented a fundamental breakdown of society, where there was no respect for authority. But there was no respect for authority because the judges themselves did not earn or warrant or deserve that respect. It just gets more wild. It says that Iov lived during the days of Achashverosh, Shenehemar, V'lo nimtza nashim yafos kibinos Iov b'chol ha'aretz. The Iov's daughters were the most beautiful women in all the land. Ezehu darshan is bakshubal nashim yafos. And what was the generation in which beautiful women were sought? Havi omer zedorosha Achashverosh. That was the generation of Achashverosh. We know he put on the beauty pageant in order to be able to find a new wife. Ve'ema be made David, but maybe it's a reference to the days of David HaMelech. What happened to the days of David HaMelech? The Siv, Vayivakshu Na'arayafa, that they sought for David HaMelech a beautiful young woman, Hasam Bechol Gvul Yisrael. But we'll say that search was only in the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Hacha Bechol Ha'aretz. Here, Rabbi say, by Eov, the Lashon seems to indicate that it was throughout the entire land. So therefore, again, now we have Eov living during the times of Achashverosh. Rabbi Nassan Omer, Eov b'mei Malchus Shiva haya. Eov lived during the times of the monarchy of Shiva. Shiva is Sheba. Shene Emar, because the Pasuk says, quoting over here, the Pasuk from Eov, Vatipo Shiva, Vatikachim. That literally what it's saying is the monarchy of Shiva, the kingdom of Shiva, attacked Eov and took his cattle. The Chum say, Bimei Kazdim Haya. He lived during the days of the Kazdim, Shenemar. Quoting over here, from the Pasuk and Eov again, Vayomer, Kazdim Samu Shlosha Roshim, Vyeshomer, Omrim, Eov Bimei Yaakov Haya. Eov lived during the days of Yaakov Avinu. Listen to this. Vedina Bas Yaakov Nasa. And Eov, in fact, was Yaakov Avinu's son-in-law. He married Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. Ksiv Hacha, Kedabra Achas Hanavalos, Tedabri. So remember again, the Navi in Eov says that Eov's wife was so fed up with all of the situation, she encouraged him to curse God so he could die. In other words, curse God so you could die, so you could be done with this wretched life. And again, he uses Lashon of, so he says to her, you're speaking like one of the vulgar people. Uksiv Hasam, Kinevala Asabi Yisrael. And when referring to the abduction and rape of Dina, so the Torah uses Lashon of Kinevala Asabi Yisrael. Disgrace was visited upon Yisrael. Vakulu, Tanai Sirilu. So we'll say, so again, we have him during Yaakov Inu's time. Yaakov Inu's son married to Dina. Vakulu Tanoi Sirilu, the Eov Mi Yisrael Hava, Lebar Mi Yesh Omrim. So we'll say, but here's the interesting part. Aside from one Yesh Omrim, everyone may disagree about the chronology, but ultimately what? But ultimately agrees that Eov was a Jew. The Isak Adaitcha Me'umos Ha'olam Hava. But ultimately, because if you hold that he was from the Gentile nations, Basar Deshachiv Moshe Mishar Yeshchina Al Obdei Kochavim. We'll say, once Moshe Rabbeinu died, did the Shechina ever rest upon idolaters? V'ha'amer mar bikesh Moshe shlo tishre Shechina al obdei kochavim. V'nasano, because we'll say Moshe Rabbeinu had a number of different requests. One of the requests was that God should not rest the Shechina, in other words, there should not be prophecy amongst the Gentile nations. And God gave into that request. Where do we know that from? Shenemar, v'niflinu ani va'amecha. God says, Tachlish Baruch Hu, let me and your nation be special. How are we special? How are we going to be different? Ultimately, again, through Nevuah. Then Nevuah will only rest on Klal Yisrael and will not go ahead and rest on the nations of the world. Rabbi Yochanan, Doro shel Eov shatof b'shitof b'zimahaya. The generation of Eov was immersed in immorality. Shene Emar, as the Pasuk says, Hein atem kulchem chazisem. Velama ze hevel tibalu. So we'll say, the Lashon by Eov is, behold, you have all seen. The Lashon of Chazisem, you have gazed. Uksiv hach, uksiv, shuvi, shuvi hashulamis, shuvi, shuvi v'necha ze bach. So we'll say, quotes over here, the Pasuk from Shir HaShirim, right? Shuvi, shuvi hashulamis, return the shulamis, come back and we will look at you. We'll say, this of course is a metaphor ultimately again, for the nations of the world trying to defile Klal Yisrael, and the Lashon ultimately is, let us gaze upon you. So that Lashon of Techazah is a Lashon ultimately of immorality. Ema b'nevuah, and maybe the Lashon of Chazisem, or the Lashon of Nechazah, is a Lashon of prophecy. Dechsiv Chazon Yishayahu ben Amos, because after all, again, we see the Lashon of Chazon by prophecy. Imkein, lama zehevel tebalu. If that's the case, ultimately, again, then why does Eov use Lashon of Hevel tebalu, which I will say indicates that what? Frivolity or nothingness. Fine. So I'll just point out to you something very interesting. So now bottom line is, there's a lot of confusion about Eov. Right? Was he machlokes if he was Jewish or not? You see, the majority of opinion says that he was Jewish. Did he live during times of Mitzrayim, times of Moshe, Ole Bavel, Achashverosh, Yaakov? You know, I think there's an incredible yisod. Meaning, what's all? You don't see another figure about whom there is so much machlokes. Elamai, because what's the Shavu saying? Because the story of Eov is a story that transcends the boundaries of time. In every generation, there's a story of Eov. At every turn, there's Tzadik Varalo. So there's difficulty placing him in a particular historical context because, unfortunately, his story is a timeless one. His story is one that we encounter in every generation, in every time, in every period of history. An incredible, incredible Yisod. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. This was, remember again, we said before that what is it? Well, we quoted this positive, and that it was in the days of the Shvot HaShoftim. Now, the way the Gemara is understanding this is the following: Dor Sheshofet Es Shoftav. It is a generation in which the generation judges its judges. Which also says, so again, remember, this is a double negative reflection. It's a negative reflection on the people because there's no respect for authority, but it's also a negative reflection on the judges because they themselves were viewed as being corrupt. So the Gemara says the following. What happened during remember again, is actually the opening pasuk of what? Of Megillas Rus. Right? So what does this mean? What was happening during these times? Omer lo tol kisei mipinei necham. They will say the judge will tell the litigant, literally, remove the splinter from between your teeth. Now, why does he mean remove the splinter from between your teeth? So it actually points out over here that that's a lashon of splinter between your teeth is a metaphor for a relatively small infraction. So the judge would give the litigant musar, you're doing something wrong, you should correct your wrong, remove the splinter from between your teeth. Omer lo, the litigant would say back to the judge, Amar lo, tol korum ibeinei necha. Why don't you remove the beam from between your eyes? As you're telling me to remove a splinter from between my teeth, you remove the beam, a much bigger piece of wood, from between your eyes, a much more visible place. Amar lo, kaspecha haya l'sigim. So the judge would tell the litigant, literally, your silver is defiled. In other words, you have to correct your monetary transactions. Amar lo, savecha mahol b'mayim. Your wine is diluted with water. Excuse me. Your wine is diluted with water. So the idea I will say is that every single time the judge tried to admonish the litigant would admonish the judge by telling you, whenever I'm doing wrong, you've got much bigger tzaras than me. I'm Rosh Hashanah, Achman, I'm Rav Yonasan. Kol Omer Malchus Shiva, Isha Haisa, Eino Ela Toa. Moses, listen to this. Whoever says that when the Navi refers to Malchus Shiva, the queen of Shiva, that if you think that it's referring to a woman, you are wrong. So the Gemara says, my Malchus Shiva, Mahusa de Shiva. I will say, what does Malchus Shiva mean? It means the kingdom of Shana. I will say, now the Marsha points out that in the Bible, Ben Yod says the same thing. This is exceptionally problematic. Why? Because there was a Malchus Shiva, meaning there was a queen of Sheba. There was a queen of Sheba. We know this. Why? Shalom Melech married her. So what's going? So how could the Navi say that whenever it says Malchus Shiva, it doesn't refer, I'm sorry? What does it mean that it doesn't refer, right, that it doesn't refer to a woman? So remember, the Marsha points out something amazing. Let's say you see this tension by the way throughout Tanakh in monarchies, especially with women. So, which is what? Which is that sometimes you see that there's an incredible push for a queen to establish her monarchical credentials separate and independent than her husband. The time where this is most manifest in Tanakh is in Megillas Esther by Vashti. The Malbim brings down that when Ahasuerus summons a Vashti to appear at his party, so she doesn't show up. Now, why doesn't she show up? She was just as immoral as he was. Why doesn't she show up? So the Malbim says something amazing. He was summoning her in order to what? In order to show the kingdom, I am the king, and she is the queen by virtue of her marriage to me. She was flexing her monarchical muscles and saying, no, I am royalty, you are not, you are king because you are married to me. She was trying to assert her monarchical credentials. Malchus Shiva, the queen of Sheba, was the same way, a strong woman, indicating that what? Her monarchical credentials was not because of anyone she married, but rather again was because of who she was. Okay? By Hi Ayom, by Avo B'nei Elokim, Lis Yatsev Al Hashem, by Yavo Gam HaSatan Bisocham. So we'll say again, the Gemara now quoting the pasuk from Iyov, and the pasuk of Iyov says that it was on that day that the Bnei Elokim, the royalty, came to go ahead, or I should say the Malchim came to gather by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Satan also came. Now remember again, this is Sefer Iyov, remember again, begins as a conversation between the Satan and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ultimately leads to the testing of Iyov. The Yomer Hashem Allah, Satan, the Ayin Tavo, so the Satan, God says, the Satan, where are you coming from? Vayan has Satan. And the Satan ultimately responds to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, "Vayomer mishut ha'aretz misalech ba." Now the Satan says, "I have come from literally touring the land, from going across the earth." So Amar the Father, say, second wide line, Tesvav Amud Beis. Amar the Father, Ribbono Shalom, Shatiti b'chol ha'olam kulo. So listen to this. So Iyov says, Ribbono Shalom, I have literally traveled throughout the entire earth. V'lo matzasi ne'eman ke'avdecha Avram. And I have found no one greater, literally no one more trusted than your servant Avram. Sha'amartolo, kum hisalich barzal kal rachba, kilucha et nena. You told Avram Avinu when he came to Canaan, get up, walk across the length and the breadth of land, because I'm giving it to you. Ba'afilu hachi. Yet despite the fact that you gave the land to Avram Avinu, b'sha'a shalom matzamakum likbor es sara, at shekarna bedalin meo shegal kasef, lo hir her achar midosecha. So the Satan, I will say, now by the way, when you get complimented by the Satan, you are in good shape. So the Satan says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've searched your entire world, and I found no one as righteous as Avram Avinu. Because here, you promised him the land, you told him the land is his, and yet what? When it came time to go ahead and purchase a burial pot for Sarah Imenu, he had to buy it, and he had to buy it at top dollar, and yet what? He never complained. He never complained. To which the Gemara says, Vayomer Hashem al Satan, Hasamta Lipcha el Abdi Iyov. So God says, tell me, Satan, did you have a look at my Iyov? Right? Did you see my servant Iyov? Ki ein kamo b'chal ha'aretz, for there is none like him throughout the entire land. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Gadol ha'ne'emar b'Iyov Yosef mimashenemar b'Avram. So says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan makes an amazing statement that the accolade, the praises that the Torah gives, that the Navi gives, Iyov, is even greater than that which was said by Avram Avinu. Deilu ba'Avram k'siv, ki ato yodati ki rei Elokim ato. By Avram Avinu, said, this is by the Akedah. It says, for now I know that you fear, that you revere God. U'b'Iyov k'siv, ish tam v'yashar, yirei Elokim v'sar meira. He will say, look at the descriptions by Iyov. He's an ishtam, a simple man, yashar, straight, yirei Elokim, a man who fears God, v'sar meira. Now asks the Gemara, my v'sar meira. Now, why do I need that last phrase? If you're already telling me that what? That he's Yirei Elokim, that he's someone who reveres and fears God, then why do you have to tell me that he's someone who veers from evil? That's obvious. Let's listen to this. My v'sar meira, this is amazing. I'm Rabbi Avraham Shmuel. Iyov, Vatran b'mamona haya. Paul said, it's very interesting to see. Iyov was mevater with his money. What does this mean? That the Paul said, he gave freely. He gave freely. Listen to this. Min hago shal olam. The way of the world is such. No sin chatzi pruta lechem v'ni. So we'll say, so often, when you are paying workers, so let's say I have to pay my worker a half a pruta. So what would I do? I would give a pruta to the storekeeper, to the shopkeeper. And what would happen? I would say to the shopkeeper, listen, give my worker half a pruta of goods, and I would take the other half a pruta, which makes sense. I'm paying him his wages. I would take the other half a pruta. So what happens, Gemara says, Iyov vitra mishalo. So what Iyov used to do was, Iyov would allow the worker to keep the whole pruta. So when Iyov paid his workers, what would he do? He'd pay them a little bit extra. He wouldn't be so medakdek with them. So it's actually so interesting, I was saying, that at the end of the day, what differentiated Iyov is that he was a giving person with his money. The Avraham Avinu was also an incredible Baal Chesed. But apparently, see, what's the difference of yesterday? I will say, Avraham Avinu was a Baal Chesed, gave of his money also. So Iyov, the way that the Gemara is bringing up is that with his workers. See, I would have thought, listen, the worker owns a wage. I, as the employer, don't have an obligation to give him. I'm paying you a salary, Baruch Hashem. So I'm giving you a salary. Who says I have an obligation to give him more? See, even in that context, where people would naturally be more exacting, and understandably so, Iyov was even more giving in that context as well. An incredible idea. Vayon ha-satan es Hashem, vayomer ha-chinom yirei Iyov Elokim, halo ata sachta ba'ado u ba'ad beiso. Vosai. So remember, this at this point in time, the Satan goes ahead. The Satan goes ahead and pipes up and says, of course you're going ahead. And of course Eov loves you. And of course Eov is wonderful. Why? The rest of us, the Gemara doesn't quote, is because Ma'ase Yodav Barachta. Because you have blessed the bounty of his hands. Meaning, Shkayach, of course Eov loves you. And of course Eov is good to you. Because look, he's wealthy. He's wealthy. He's got a beautiful mishpacha. He has everything in life. So we'll say again, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you everything in life. It is much easier to be a believer. Although again, we know that's not necessarily true. Because very often, again, material bounty sometimes has the reverse effect on people. But Lamaisa, the Satan, saying, Shkoyach that he loves you. Shkoyach that he's serving you. You've given him all of these incredible barakas. My ma'ase yada barakah. We'll say, what does it mean that you have blessed the handiwork of his hands? Amru Shabar Yitzchak called a nota pruta me Eov misbarech. Because we'll say whoever took a pruta from Eov, meaning whoever used to go ahead and receive even a pruta from Eov, would be blessed. In other words, that to just get money from Eov, whatever you, essentially everything Eov had was blessed. So even if you were lucky enough to get something from him, he was so like overflowing with blessing that if you got something from him, you are blessed as well. My umiknehu paratz baris. What does it mean when it says that his flock, literally paratz, you know, like spread out over the land? I'm Rav Yossi. Listen to this. I'm Rav Yossi Bar Chanina. Miknehu shel Eov partsu gidro shel olam. So the flock of Eov, we'll say literally partsu gidro shel olam means it literally broke down the fences. In other words, that it went against the normal teva of the world. The normal nature. How does that mean? Minhago shel olam. This is wild. Ze'evim hargim ha'izim. It is the natural order of the world that what? That wolves kill sheep. Mikneo shel Eov. But in the flock of Eov, izim hargim es ha'ze'evim. In the flock of Eov, so what happened? The goats would go out and kill the wolves. In other words, they will say that's how much protection, that's how much shmira was upon the flock of Eov. That again, even the wolves, it's not just the pshat that the wolves didn't attack. That even if the wolves did attack, ultimately again, it was Eov's own goats that protected the flock. All right, so we'll stop over here for today. We'll let Mir Tz Hashem pick up with the rest of the story of Eov, Mir Tz Hashem, tomorrow. Shkoyach. Thank you.